Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of T1 Talks. This is a podcast where we aim to share our experiences living with type 1 diabetes to build a sense of community for diabetics, both type 1 and 2. We want to dispel any myths about what it means to be a type 1 and increase diabetic awareness through our stories. I'm Gianna, a type 1 diabetic of 14 years and a recent graduate of the College of New Jersey.
And I'm Victoria. I'm a medical student from Saskatchewan, Canada, and I was just diagnosed with type 1 diabetes in March of this year.
And today we're covering two of my favorite subjects, and those are work and diabetes.
You're so funny. So, totally. For me, so much of my work lately is diabetes. It's so common, especially working in the hospital. And so I think what I've been finding is like my diabetes offers me sort of a new or a unique perspective, both with my patients as well as my colleagues who maybe don't know as much about diabetes. So that's been fun.
Yeah, I would definitely say that your situation is special in that case. I think I've mentioned this before, but I've been working since I was 14. I'm 23 now. So I've had a lot of practice trying to manage a successful balance between my diabetes and my work life. And I can tell you with a good amount of certainty that my jobs are definitely where my sugars are struggling the most. I find that even though my diabetes is managed 10 times better than it used to be, when I'm at work, that's where my sugars are most out of control. And it hasn't always been that way with every job, but for the last couple of years, it's been pretty consistent where that's the area I'm working on the most.
Definitely. I know for me, it felt impossible to even consider working with type 1 diabetes. And even now that I am working, like obviously sugars are challenging to control, especially when you're at work. But for me, when I was sort of thinking about this in the abstract, something that I needed to do was find other people who were successfully doing it. And so for me, that meant finding other type 1 diabetics who were in medical school or were already practicing physicians. And I was so lucky because I had other type 1 diabetics in my class. I'd met the endocrinologists who were at the diabetic workshop that day. And I also learned a long time ago with sort of my previous diagnosis that like if there's a condition that you're feeling insecure about, doing a quick Google search, looking for famous people or people in your career stream or athletes or whatever, I think can go a really long way for your confidence. And it's just harder for your anxiety or my anxiety to convince me that I can't do it when I'm like, oh, but hey, there's all these amazing people who are doing it. And so trust us when we say, and we're going to say this the whole episode, but you can really do anything even as a type 1 diabetic. And this is especially becoming true now that we have technology advances like the Dexcom, because we've just been able to see like our first commercial pilot in the States anyways, fly a real plane, which was something that was impossible even like 10 years ago, I would say. And so I really hope that we're just going to see this continue to develop. And as technology advances, we'll see fewer and fewer restrictions on type 1 diabetics, which I'm really excited for.
Yes, I remember just feeling so cool when I heard about that pilot because, I don't know, it's just so crazy as someone who grew up with diabetes and primarily before social media grew to be what it is today. I just remember this constant feeling of no one else has diabetes. No one else is dealing with the same things I'm dealing with. And I just felt super alone, at least in that aspect of my life, because it wasn't something I heard people talking about really ever outside of the whole dessert table thing that I talked about in a different episode. I just didn't know that there were people doing cool things out there with diabetes. I feel like I only really focused on the negative sides of it and the fact that I didn't have anyone to talk to about it. Although I will say I was a Jonas Brothers fan, so hearing about Nick Jonas sneaking juice boxes off stage during his concerts, it always did make me feel a little better because here was this guy I looked up to and he had the one thing that made me different from everyone that I knew.
Nick Jonas is a big one that I've heard a lot about, especially in type 1, because like everyone's young and whatever. Like I wasn't a big Jonas Brothers fan, but I get it. It's good.
It's okay. I'll support them enough for the both of us.
I'll date myself here, but when I was doing research for this episode, I found out that Anne Rice, who writes like vampire novels, you probably have heard of her. Anyway, she's type 1 diabetic. And then I know we have like I think he's placed for the Montreal Canadiens. He has diabetes and he's a really good hockey player. And again, like, because I'm such a nerd, a Supreme Court justice in the United States, and I'm going to butcher this, but her name is Sonia Sotomayor. She's the first person with type 1 to ever serve on the high court. And I just thought that was so cool because she's both a woman and a type 1 diabetic, and she's a justice on the United States Supreme Court.
That is genuinely so awesome. I am obsessed with learning about all these people that are diabetics and especially these diabetic first. I think it's so interesting that we're living during this time where this is happening. I think it's gonna pave a awesome path for future diabetics. And I think diabetic technology plays a big part in this, but I also think it's just people being more open with their diabetes. I go on Instagram all the time, and more recently I'm seeing all these diabetic models popping up, online influencers wearing Dexcom, celebrities, athletes, whatever. And my favorite part about it is that they're just normalizing it. Like, there's no spotlight on a diabetic. I mean, occasionally there is, but what I'm talking about is that this person isn't special because of their diabetes, but they're wearing these devices and they're doing these things that diabetics do, and they're making them appear like average everyday things, which I personally really enjoy. And I also enjoy the fact that I'm seeing these people who live these really busy lives. They're traveling all the time. They're running around doing this and that, and they're doing it with diabetes. I mean, I know we don't see 100% of their life, but they seem to be healthy while they're doing it. It really motivates me to keep chasing my dreams, even when my diabetes feels so debilitating. And it reminds me that the only thing stopping me from doing that isn't my diabetes, it's myself. And that sounds cliche and I hate it, but it's true.
Yeah, it's super important to feel like you can do anything, but also recognize that life looks different as a type 1 diabetic, and that includes work, right? Like, my day looks a little different than my peers who don't have type 1 diabetes. That's normal.
And I do want to just point out the fact that even though we say you can do anything with diabetes, we're not saying diabetes should be easy for you. Once you have it under control, piece of cake, like, you can do whatever. No, everything you do is going to take adjusting, it's going to take work. And it's not going to be easy, but I want you to know that those options are still out there, and it's still possible, and it's still manageable.
Exactly. And I think if you are sort of worrying about what you can do and like how you're going to be able to do it, the biggest piece of advice that I would give anyone, including myself moving forward, is to just make sure that you can and do communicate freely with people around you, and try your best to sort of keep that communication open and going throughout your entire time working. And even like, it's hard because my job is so weird, especially as a student. There's a lot of expectations put on us that we're where we need to be right on time, like, or early, and sort of like weird things. It's like, if you don't have time to take lunch, it's expected that you don't take a lunch break. But we all know that that's not what my life looks like. And honestly, like, we do get lunch most days, so it's not that bad. But I obviously feel worried about bringing it up because it's a big deal. And I think that, like, and I know we talked about this in our second episode, but obviously medical accommodations can be looked at as like making an excuse, right? Like getting out of something or whatever. But I think when you open up that conversation before something ever happens, it just makes it more understandable when you do need to step away, rather than having it look like an excuse, right? So like, oh, I'm going to look at this patient and I don't want to go see them, so I'm going to take a juice break. Versus if I've already had this conversation, then they know sort of what to expect and why I'm doing what I do. And it also puts parameters around it. Like, no, I'm not going to go take a 5-minute juice break. I'm going to go drink my juice box and I'll be back, right?
Oh, definitely. And I actually have a story that I think is relevant here, where someone said to me, completely well-intended, that I don't know exactly word for word what they said, but something along the lines of they thought that the way I was handling my diabetes was really awesome, and that they were happy I wasn't like this other diabetic they knew where the person was using their diabetes as an excuse. And I didn't really know how to feel about this, because I did understand the compliment here. They thought that I was handling my diabetes really well for what was going on, and they enjoyed the fact that I didn't try to consistently get out of things with my diabetes. I did get what they were trying to acknowledge here, but this ends up setting up the super unrealistic expectation where I don't feel comfortable communicating when I'm having problems with my diabetes, which is quite often, I might add. And then I end up, even when I'm on the verge of passing out, not wanting to shatter this idea that this person has of me, where my diabetes is already so well taken care of that I never have to leave to take care of this or that. Everything's going well all the time. But that's not how it is. I'm always going to have highs and lows. And I don't know this other person, so I can't speak for them. But I've had weeks where I've gone on terrible streaks with my diabetes. And I even think the people who manage it best that I know always have these times where they need to go and take care of it. And sometimes they happen really inconveniently when you're in the middle of something that is super important, but that has to come first. So while I think it is great to celebrate when you know someone that has been on a really positive upward streak of not having to point out these lows and highs, I do think wording it in that kind of way can make a person feel like you have this idea in your mind that when a diabetic needs to take care of their sugar levels, they can't say anything because it's just to get out of something that they're doing. You know what I'm saying? I feel like I'm just rambling at this point.
I totally see what you're saying. I think it makes it really hard when we have to do the work to start the conversation going, and then somebody comes back at us with this sort of qualifier around what it means to be a, and I hate that, I hear it all the time, but a good diabetic versus a bad diabetic. And what does that even mean, right? Like, as somebody who has, say, very tight diabetic control, you could have more lows as someone, right? Like, it doesn't make a difference. Your control doesn't matter. I still have lows often at work, especially when I eat lunch, which seems so weird, but it's because I dose for my lunch and then I have trouble managing that through the day. But it's like, that looks like I'm a quote unquote bad diabetic, but really, like, I'm just trying to live my life.
100%. I would say my diabetes is kept in check maybe 10% of the time. And I am so bad when it comes to this tip that you're giving, Victoria. I suck at communicating when my sugar is messed up. I try to push through what I can. And I only really tell people when it's either A, completely necessary and I'm at like my breaking point, or B, they've really established this open communication and let me know that it's okay if my sugars aren't great, and they offer themselves there as support. But with this example that I was giving, I would quietly sit there feeling like crap because my sugars were messed up, but I wanted to uphold this image I thought they had of me as a perfect diabetic who had nothing wrong, you know? Might as well not even be a diabetic. I could just run my own pancreas. In reality, I know this person would not have, you know, openly told me that I was using my diabetes as an excuse, or probably even made me feel that way given it happened in a situation where I had to leave because of my diabetes. It just was something that from the moment they said that stuck with me. And from then on, I just assumed that if I ever brought my diabetic problems up to them, that would be the first thing their mind went to, that other person. And I didn't want that. My main point of this story is that with a lack of communication comes danger when it comes to diabetes. And relating it back to work, which is our main focus for this episode, is sometimes you're going to have jobs where you're going to be working with a ton of different people and communication can get lost super easily. For example, my job, I handed in a medical accommodation and I hand that in to one person, not every person I work with. So then I have to go around, really challenge myself to speak up to these other people and make sure they know what I'm comfortable with doing at work, what I'm not comfortable with doing, if I have time limits on anything, stuff like that. And a lot of the people that I've talked to that I do work with on a daily basis didn't know I had this accommodation. So to them, I'm sure some of my symptoms or some of the things I'm asking for don't really make sense. That's why I find it so important to tell them what's going on, because they're the ones I'm going to see, and they're the ones that are likely going to be there if anything goes wrong. When I look back on the story I told in episode 2, where I blacked out from low blood sugar, if my coworker hadn't known about my diabetes, she would have likely just thought I was drunk and sent me home, or I don't know exactly what she would have thought, but it definitely wouldn't have been diabetes because I wasn't doing anything that implied I had it for someone who doesn't know that much about it. I just think it's really important that even though it may be hard for you, you make sure that you're constantly communicating the way you're feeling when you're at work.
Exactly. I think that that really hits the nail on the head. I mean, I have 2 new doctors, supervisors a week that I have to tell, plus a handful of residents, my peers, just anyone who's around, especially if something's going on. So like if I can hide it, then I do. But also sometimes you can't. And I know I was with this, like, she's a fantastic doctor and we were together for a whole week. And on the first day, I never formally sit down with them and like explain things. I wear my Dexcom on my arm so it's visible. And I just make sure to be open about the fact that I am a diabetic. And so however I bring it into the conversation, I will. And then I just sort of explain little bits about it. So, I mean, most people, especially in the medical community, are very curious. They're curious about my Dexcom. They're curious about my pump. They're curious about my management. They just sort of ask questions. And I really appreciate that because it makes it easier for me to be like, oh yeah, I get my Dexcom alerts to my watch. And like, I can see my sugars on my watch. And a super interesting thing happened where we were in seeing a patient and my sugars were dropping. So I was checking my watch fairly often when we were in the patient room, which again looks rude and I get it, but obviously I have a reason for it and my doctor knows why and whatever. But she had noticed that I was checking my watch a lot and had made the connection that it was my sugars. And so just like as we were leaving the room, like there was no time for me to need to say anything to her. She was like, no, like if you need a minute, you just go take a minute. It's fine. We'll just wait for you. Which I found really nice because it took that out of my hands. And in that moment, I was fine to say, no, like I can hang out for another minute, but I might need to step away. And then when it came to the time where I did need to step away, that was totally appropriate. I just like right now, because we wear masks, it's not appropriate for me to like take my mask off and drink a juice on the ward, but I can go step off the ward and drink it on my own.
I absolutely love that. I love when people let you know that they are there and they are happy to help you, but they are not taking over and telling you you can't do something or you have to step to the side.
Exactly. It was so in my control. And that's really something that happens, I think, more often than I was expecting to. There is a lot of sort of time and space for when you need to look after yourself, as long as you make those needs known. Another thing that was really good for me was I have been seeing a lot of diabetic patients with pretty serious and sometimes deadly complications from their diabetes. And like, I know, as you can imagine, Gianna, like that's anxiety provoking. You're looking at these people who are suffering really real consequences from this disease that you also share. And sort of like the doc took the time to educate me around what it means to have tight control as a type 1 diabetic and what the complication risks are and how the diabetics that we see in hospital are not the same as me. And she really took the time with me to go through that. And I really appreciated that because I was feeling really quite anxious about it at the time. And I needed somebody to sit down with me and say, hey, you can do something about this now that will prevent this from happening, instead of feeling like that was inevitable, which it isn't inevitable. And none of these things would have been possible if I hadn't had that initial conversation with her, where it was okay for me to talk about it in front of her. It was okay for me to talk about it with my peers. Everyone knows what's going on with me. When I step away, everyone knows I'll be back in 2 minutes. And if I'm not back in 2 minutes, they wouldn't think I'm doing something I shouldn't. They'd be concerned and come looking for me. And that's all really important to me because I don't want to be passed out from a low in the hospital somewhere, you know?
Oh, 100%. Kind of like what I was saying before, I think the biggest thing here is that people are afraid to speak up. They're afraid to set boundaries. And I'm really speaking from personal experience here. And I know you can at least relate, Victoria. You never want to feel like you're asking for too much. And I think that's something that diabetics feel quite often, to be honest, especially at their place of work. I have one specific situation that's coming to mind. And it was one time I was at work. I used to be a server. And I had literally waited until I was in tears before telling my boss that my sugar was low and that I needed help. And that's happened on more than one occasion in the past. And looking back, I genuinely get so mad at myself now, because I was too afraid to talk about doing a certain task that I knew was going to be a lot on me. And I knew that my sugar wasn't in the state for me to do that. Or I would consistently put myself in a position that triggered lows or highs just because I was trying to impress someone at my job. And there were also times when I knew I needed to go home and grab something. I forgot insulin, I forgot test strips, something like that. Instead of just asking, I didn't want to feel like I was asking for too much. And I would sit there with my sugar in the 400s for the entire shift. It was just so many times I would end up sitting there silently resenting both my diabetes and the fact that nobody could see how bad I was struggling. And I was really doing nothing to help myself. Obviously, I've talked about it. I'm working really hard to end that streak this year and be more open about how I'm feeling while I'm working and just doing anything that involves other people in my diabetes in general. I really want to be able to enjoy my shifts and just stay healthy in general. And that requires me taking care of myself first and foremost. I think it's good to remind yourself every so often that no job is worth your life, and that you can get so much more done when you're living a healthy life and taking care of your blood sugars rather than when you're not able to do anything because your sugars are all messed up all over the place.
Seriously, though, that's so true. And like, Gianna, to your credit, I've watched you do so well this year, starting new jobs and opening that communication with people around you and like really sticking to that. And you're sticking to that today. And I know it's hard. We all know it's hard, but it's something we all have to do. And like you were saying, well, and like we've been saying this whole time, is you have to look after yourself first. And something that is extremely clear in my world, because I see it every day, is just what diabetes looks like if you don't look after it. And it's really a non-option. I have my peers ask me, oh, what do you do if you like have to take a juice break and you can't? And I look at them and I'm like, it's not an option. It, and again, it sounds silly, but literally it's like, it's not that I'm hungry and I need to eat something. It's that I will pass out if I don't have a juice box right now. And so you would rather me do that. You would rather me step away and take 2 minutes and drink a juice than pass out. And in the same breath, you would rather me take some insulin and look after myself than end up with high sugars for my whole life and end up with very real permanent consequences from that. No matter what you're doing, you are the person who needs to make it through the day. Every single day. And that means looking after your diabetes. It's not something that can be ignored.
Oh, yeah. And to their credit, most of the people that I've told about my symptoms and my needs as a diabetic have been super understanding and pretty responsive about it. I've had people at my current job let me know that if I ever need to step off,
I should never feel like I can't tell them.
And that's exactly what I'm looking for. But I won't lie, it hasn't been like that at every job. It hasn't been like that with every person I've met. And I've met a lot of people that are also skeptic in the beginning, and they can ask a lot of questions that can be interpreted as maybe accusatory. And I think it can be really damaging, because at least for me, I then feel like I have to consistently prove myself to them, prove my symptoms. I just get nervous at work about being fired or looked down upon. I don't want someone to think that my low blood sugar is a reason I can't keep up. But I will say that it is always, always, always worth it to just get those feelings out there, because I promise whatever that ignorant person is making you feel like, it will not be as bad as the symptoms of just sitting there feeling awful with your higher low blood sugars. And I think of that when I think of me having to do the things I don't want to do in regards to talking to these people about my diabetes. I always remember the times when I didn't talk about it and how I ended up feeling at the end of that. And I always know it's worse than however that person makes me feel in that one moment.
And again, like, I think that this speaks to sort of having those conversations a little bit ahead of time and really preparing yourself to have those conversations when you aren't feeling great. Because that moment where I need to take a juice box and go step outside of the ward and drink it is the hardest time. It's not harder for me to have that conversation initially where the doc can be prepared for me to do that. And everyone knows where I'm going. So it's not like anyone's like, oh, where did Vicky go? But it's okay in those moments to feel really scared and to feel like it's a bad thing to do and like you're asking for an excuse or whatever. But just then send T1 Talks a message on Instagram and we will commiserate, because it probably won't be as bad as you think it is. And even if it is, that's only one person's opinion of you that really doesn't matter.
Exactly. And there will be others, we promise.
And so, speaking of preparedness, I think something that I've really found, especially because in the hospital, I'm here and there and everywhere, I need to be prepared. Like I say, if I'm just going to run off and drink a juice box, that means I need to have a juice box on me. And so it's actually less inconvenient if I have snacks and things on me all the time. And I literally pack my scrubs with snacks. So I always have a juice box and I have something sweet and something salty always. And then I'm also like never far away from the cafeteria or where there's snacks around. And then it's, I think, important just to use them when you need to and be ready to sort of get more if you need it.
Yes, overpacking supplies will save your life. I think if you're at your job a lot, maybe you're working full time or overtime, whatever it is, I think you can talk to someone at your job about keeping supplies there. That can be super helpful. If there's a mini fridge, maybe you can even find out about insulin if you're there enough. I cannot tell you how many times I've spent a majority of my shifts on like the 300 to 400s because I've run out of something and it really sucks. Or if I'm, you know, running late to work, I don't want to have to worry about not having glucose tablets in my car or going in without test strips, you know, before I had my Dexcom. I just think it's really smart to always be proactive and be prepared when it comes to things like this, because there are those little things that can always end up making or breaking your day. You don't want to forget anything, and you also just don't want to have to be worrying about it all the time.
You have to be prepared, I think. And then I think also reaching out to people around you. You're not the only person who has snacks on you. Even non-diabetics bring snacks. And for me, like, I have one friend who is diabetic, so obviously she has lots of snacks, but all of my other friends' lockers are packed with stuff. And so it's okay to ask for help in those moments when we need it. Obviously, people aren't going to have the insulin you need, but they will have other things you might need. So yeah, I think that asking for help is hard, but so important,
especially whenever you're starting a new job.
Oh yeah, I agree. With every job you have, there's guaranteed to be a big period of transition for anyone, but especially with diabetics, you're noticing all these new patterns that develop with your schedule.
Exactly. And I think like until you start the job, there's no way to actually prepare for these things. Something I've really noticed is that I've had to completely change when I change out my sensor for my Dexcom and my cannula for my pump. And I think that this would be the same for anyone if you're on multiple daily injections or if you're even just finger pricking, you're going to have to figure out what time is best. But for me, what I found is because my sugars always run high in the mornings, I want to change my Dexcom then because I'm not worried about going low and I can just work through those 2 hours without worrying. But let me tell you, this Saturday, I was off work. I was not on call. And I was up at 7 a.m. changing my darn sensor. So like it definitely is hit or miss. But for me, for work and for my safety when I'm at the hospital, I need to be up. And I was. I woke up at 7 a.m. to change my sensor. That's what you do as a diabetic. And then I find that I actually change my pump sites in the nighttime, like in the evenings. And it's sort of for the same reason. And that's just because if my cannula isn't working, I will know that by the morning and I can sort of get it sorted out before I go off for my day versus if it's not until the, like if I change it in the morning, I don't know that it isn't working until the evening. And by then I've had lunch, I've had dinner maybe, and my whole day is just hooped.
Yeah, for me, things that I've noticed need a lot of focus time when I'm switching jobs is basal adjustment, seeing how certain tasks affect my blood sugar. I do a million different things at my job. So when I'm in one department versus another, my basal is different. Sometimes it's suspended. Sometimes I need it higher. There's a million things to factor in. And that's another thing you need to think about, stress. Maybe if you're a doctor and you're constantly having to talk to patients or wake up at random hours, you're going to have a lot of stress. And stress can definitely affect your blood sugar. These are all things you need to think about. And that's why I stress like recording these patterns early on. The earlier you can catch them, the earlier you can manage them, or at least try to.
It's so funny that you mentioned that because the other day I showed up for a shift that I thought started at 7:30 a.m. So I get there at, you know, 20 after seven and the auditorium is black. There's no one in there. It's dark. And so I'm like, oh no, we're not meeting in the auditorium. So I go up to the sixth floor from the first and I'm like, okay, we're meeting here. And then again, no one is there. And I go down and up and down and up. And I'm just taking the elevator because I'm not climbing this many flights of stairs. I swear my sugar started around 6. And by the time I had realized that I was just there half an hour early, nothing was starting until 8, my sugars had gone up to 10. I hadn't changed anything. It had been like 20 minutes and my sugars skyrocketed. And I noticed the same thing anytime I'm in like having a difficult conversation with a patient or their family is even if I'm like worried about going low, like I'm sitting at like 4.6, by the time I walk out of the patient's room, I'm up to like 5.7 just because it's purely stress. It's just my sugars climb until I'm relaxed and then they fall. And for me, this has meant that I've increased my basal by quite a bit, by about 20% or 25% even in the morning hours. And then in the evenings or afternoons, I drop it back down to normal, but that's just what's working for me so far.
Exactly. And I know I'm the exact opposite at my job because in the position I'm put in the most, I'm constantly running outside, inside. I'm doing a lot of quick thinking. Even with those Gatorades that I was talking about before, my sugars end up being low for most of my shift. And this was one of those things that I had to transition into and adjust, which actually reminds me of another thing I would say to look out for when you're starting a new job, and that is meals. You're likely going to have to eat during your shifts. And if you're someone like me who doesn't carb count, I would definitely suggest trying to stick to similar meals or meal prepping, just because you don't want to be constantly trying things that you have no idea how to account for, trying to guesstimate to take care of it, and ending up feeling sick for the rest of your shift because you didn't know how much insulin you needed. When you're consistently eating the same thing, you can get a better grasp of how that's going to affect you, how that works with your work schedule, and it'll give you one less thing to worry about.
Yeah, I totally can't agree more with that. I know something that I tried really hard to do was just like my favorite meal at the hospital is chili. And so I tried to learn how to eat that early so that it's sort of the easiest thing I can eat. It's also something I always feel like because I fight with
lack of appetite often. So like, it's really nice to know how long I need to pre-bolus for, how many units of insulin I need, and sort of how my day is going to go after I have that. And then it gives me sort of more freedom on days where, you know, maybe my afternoon isn't going to be so busy, or maybe I'm going to be off early, where I can experiment with harder things to eat. So like the other day I had fish and chips. That was really good. I find salads extremely hard to dose for because I end up overdosing still. I'm not really sure how to count the carbs and vegetables. So that's just still a learning thing. But I really think it's important just to look at every time you eat as a learning opportunity. And also, like, I know for me, I feel miserable if I go too high. And so I try not to have that be the first time I'm eating something is at the hospital when I'm working. It's like, no, I can bring that home and eat it at home. And then if I end up high, I can deal with it that way.
Yeah, and something that'll definitely help with that is if you have a continuous glucose monitor, keeping those alarms on no matter how annoying they get, just because it helps you be able to catch those lower high blood sugars earlier, and you're able to be more efficient at work because you're stopping yourself before you head too far in either direction. It's so easy to get caught up in what you're doing that you completely forget to test your sugar, so it's a good way to just remind yourself over and over when it's going off every 5 minutes.
Absolutely. I know in the past, and I still would, but I have advocated for having no alarms other than the low alarms, which for me have always been helpful, but I've turned off my high alarms before. And now when I'm working, I can't do that because I'm not paying close enough attention. I want to know if I hit above, say, 200. And I want to know if I'm below, I mean, right now we were talking, I have it set at 4.5 in the Canadian scale, which is about 80-ish maybe. So pretty high, but it gives me time to either decide, okay, I can ignore this for a minute while I finish what I'm doing, or say, okay, this is a good time, let me run out and have a juice. And I can sort of make that decision, and I never end up symptomatically low. So I'm never at like 3.6 looking at my phone being like, oh no, I have 5 minutes or I'm going to be really sweating and feeling yucky. It's way better to look and be like, oh, I'm 80. I have 5 minutes if I need it, but then still be able to treat it and not actually become symptomatic. Because I know for me, when my sugars are low, I don't notice things as well. So like I pay less attention to my surroundings. And as you can imagine, that's not what you want your doctor to be doing.
Oh my gosh, yes. And it's so good to be ahead with these things. You want to be able to finish what you're doing and catch it in advance rather than wait until you're on the verge of diabetic shock before realizing you have no other choice but to take care of it.
Exactly. And with that said, it's super important that we all remember bad days and bad times are going to happen. And so if you say go really low and you need to go home for the day, or you're having a day where you're just like through the roof high and you just feel like crap and you're throwing up, take the time you need. Also push through what you can, which sometimes means like, you know, okay, like I'm low, I'm going to drink this juice, I'm going to take a 20-minute break, and then I'm going to come back to this because I think I'll be feeling better. And that's okay too. Like we all need to know what we're capable of and push ourselves. But we also need to realize that it's okay to be human and that we are always better off, like you were saying, it takes less time to fix a low when you're not actually low, when you're at 80, than it does when you're at 40 and you're in tears. And you're trying to figure things out. And then at the same time, and this is something I struggle with, especially as being a Canadian, but don't apologize for things you can't control or change. So when my sugars are low all day, it just sucks. We all know that. There's sometimes nothing you can do. The other day, I just drank juice box after juice box after juice box. I was low all day. And if I'd realized that was going to happen, I could have lowered my basal or done something about it. But by the time it's been 8 hours, like I've just been fighting it for 8 hours and didn't realize. And we all have days like that. And you just need to keep moving forward.
And I think it really boils down to the self-blame that's tied with diabetes. I know for me personally, something I have to constantly remind myself is that me going out of my way to take care of myself isn't me failing at something. For example, I just asked to be transferred from a certain department at my job, and doing this was one of the hardest things just because I really don't like having a task where I know it would be easy for me to do without diabetes, but because I'm constantly having low blood sugars from it, it becomes more of a struggle and it starts affecting other aspects of my health too. And in reality, me asking to be transferred, it wasn't me failing. It was really me succeeding at being the best worker for this location. I have other positions I can fulfill. I do them really well. I'm trying to keep myself healthy, keep my work efficient. And the best thing for me in this situation was to ask to have more shifts in different departments. And yes, it bugs me that I'm going around telling people that they can do anything with diabetes, and here I am giving up this position. But I really sat down and thought about it, and this isn't something that I want to do career-wise. This isn't something I'm going to be doing the rest of my life, if all goes to plan. And because of that, it wasn't worth it for me in this situation. And now I really think it was the best option for me. I feel like what I'm saying probably has a lot of contradictions and is coming out really confusing, but I'm still trying to figure this out myself. So I just figured I'd share how I was feeling in regards to having asked something like that and just having to prioritize my health versus my work.
I think that, like we've been saying this whole episode, and like we say all the time, like you have to be able to communicate with the people around you, whether those are mentors who are doing it with you with diabetes, or whether it's your coworkers or your bosses. And I think it's easy to say like, oh yeah, we've had all these good experiences and yeah, people are really understanding. And I think generally they are, but you will run into people who are ignorant and people who don't respond how you're hoping they will, people who make you feel lesser than. And I think that those are the times when it's good to listen to episodes of podcasts like this, where you can remind yourself you're not alone in this. You're not unreasonable for needing these things. And if anyone else was being their own pancreas, like we are, they would be asking for the same thing.
Something a few of my friends have pointed out to me whenever I'm making a decision and I'm like, oh no, this feels like I'm using my diabetes as an excuse. I don't want people to feel that way. They always say, no, you actually have diabetes and this is your reason. It's completely valid.
I love that. I totally agree.
I always forget how true that is.
And with that, I think we shared all of the tips we had for this episode. Hopefully these give you some extra confidence when it comes to looking after your diabetes at work, especially when it comes to talking to people around you about it. And now it's time for us to share our weekly goals.
Yay!
So last time my goal was to find a workout I can do from home, and I did. Stay tuned on our Instagram to see it. I haven't done the workout yet, but I do have plans to try it soon. I was thinking this weekend, but the weather's been so nice here that I think I'll have to just spend my time outside and save the home workout for like a rainy day.
I think you're the only person I know that can juggle a podcast, working in a hospital, and find time to work out.
Well, we'll see how it goes. I'm definitely struggling working so much in terms of trying to find balance, but it's helpful just keeping busy. I don't know. So this week, I'm going to work on adjusting my basal dose. I know that I worked on this a lot previously, and I feel like I got things really figured out. But now I'm running into my least favorite thing, which are nighttime lows. And especially now that I'm at the hospital 60 or more hours a week, I really need to get my beauty sleep.
Ugh, I used to have a job that worked really late, like midnight and after. And every time I came home, my sugar would be low from work, but then I'd be eating a ton at night and end up high in my sleep. So it was just a disaster. I wish you luck with that, though.
I have faith.
You know your numbers pretty well. Okay, so as for me, last week I talked about how I was going hiking and my goal was to have no lows during that hike. Well, it was a complete and utter failure because not only did I spend the entire hike low, but I arrived to this hike, start out with a low blood sugar, eat a couple of snacks, trying to save what I have because I packed a lot, but I didn't pack that much to start the hike low. And we're about 15, maybe 20 minutes into the hike and it starts to thunder, it starts to pour, and we decide that the smartest thing to do here is to turn around. So we turn around, and the entire way back, I'm just guzzling down all my snacks. And luckily, I was okay by the time we made it back to the car, but it was just a little stressful, not what I was looking for. And I didn't get a hike or a great blood sugar. So that was my goal.
That's okay. You're trying. That's all that matters.
Yeah, well, it's definitely a story I won't forget. Moving forward to this week, I was planning to do something that isn't diabetes related and brings us back to a previous episode where I talked about how I was building a small scale wooden version of the house from Pixar's Up. I started to build it and it didn't go so well, and that kind of intimidated me and scared me away from the project. But this week, I'm hoping to get back into it and start over and have the core walls built by the next episode. I think it's possible, but I just need to start facing it instead of running away from it.
It has to work out because I can't wait to see your progress. Like, I need to see this up house, Gianna. Don't give up.
I'm overdue for a win in this podcast anyway, so I will make it happen.
I believe in you. And so I think with that, we'll close out our episode and we'll see you next time.
Until then, we'll talk to you guys on our Instagram at T1Talks, and we'll be back next week.